Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guests will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here. In the studio with me again today is Peter Bunton. Welcome, Peter.
Larry, great to be here.
Well, I'm really looking forward to our focus today. And for all those listening throughout the world, I think last we checked, we're now connecting with 172 nations by the grace of God.
Yeah.
Got about 25 maybe nations to go yet. And so the leadership truths we talk about apply across the globe, across the world, in any culture, obviously. Today we're going to talk about leadership from the perspective of cell groups, small groups, house churches, and what history teaches us about that, coming from your book that I love. I've recommended this book really all over the world, Peter. Cell groups and house churches, what history teaches us. So we want to dive right in today.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. And I've learned so much from you on this, and I've been so blessed, again, with all that I've learned from you. And I want our friends around the world to have the same blessing right now.
Okay.
So again, you can pick up that book and check the show notes, pick up that book online by checking with the Dove Store or however you want to do that. So number one, why did you write this book, Peter?
Yeah, well, thank you, Larry. Great to be here. I wrote this book about 20 years ago now, actually. And it came from the fact that I was reading a lot of books about cell groups and cell church, how to do cell church today. And everyone seemed to say, hey, this was in the Bible, it was New Testament. And then there was virtually no reference to anything in the 2,000 years between the biblical times, New Testament times, and us today. Maybe with the exception of John Wesley.
Right.
There were quite a few books that would talk about how John Wesley used different forms of small group.
As you know, so, he's one of my heroes.
Yes, I do know that. So we will get to Wesley.
Good.
I promise you we can mention
Wesley.
All right. But I guess I wanted to look at history and think, if this is a God thing, then surely there were other examples that we could look at and learn from. So that was my motivation, really, in beginning this study and this book.
Right. And of course, in the Dove Global family, we believe so much in small groups, cell groups, knowing it's a place for discipleship. It's a place where people can grow, people can learn leadership. All that can happen there.
Yes.
So today we speak of often small groups and cell groups and life groups, whatever. In your investigation of cell groups in church history, what were they called?
Well, yeah, very different names. And I looked at a period really from the Reformation onwards for a few hundred years, and the Puritans called them conventicles. Wesley had class meetings. He had bands.
Right.
Some of the pietists in the Lutheran churches called them collegia pietatis. It's a Latin word that really means holy groups for holiness. Societies was used. So there's a lot of different terminology out there for this phenomenon of small group meetings,
which
we should kind of go into, I think.
So 2,000 years of church history is a lot of time, Peter. Which periods or movements did you study?
Yes, as I said, I really started with the Reformation. I'm not saying there wasn't anything before, but I looked at the great reformers. And then through the Pietists, the Puritans, some of the Lutherans, Wesley, the Methodists, the Moravians, really through to about the year 1800. So it was a kind of a 300-year history, really, from about 1500 to 1800, largely in Europe, but that was in many ways the center of the theological discussion and leadership of much of the worldwide church at that time.
Exactly. Well, let's start then with the Reformation. Did the Reformation bring about the use of small groups, cell groups, home groups, or not?
Yes, and that's such an interesting question because I could say yes and no. So let me give you that answer. I would say, for example, Martin Luther, the great reformer in Germany, he developed a theology that made a way for small groups, perhaps without actually implementing them.
Really?
Because if you think about it, the Reformation was really the priesthood of all believers.
Right, exactly.
It was a great doctrine. We are all servants of God. Right. We can all hear from God. We can all study the scriptures for ourselves. And that was very revolutionary in the 16th century in Europe. And a theology like that means that lay people can get together and read God's word and teach each other and confess their faults and pray for each other, even administer sacraments.
Right.
So Luther's theology started to pave a way for small groups. He himself did actually advocate them, but didn't quite implement them. So he talked about how we should set up new forms of church meeting where believers can meet in homes. Mm-hmm. They can even baptize one another. They can hear one another's confession and pray for each other. So he wrote that, but he didn't actually go on to implement that strategy.
Well, let's talk about that, because, again, you mentioned he advocated for the development of these small groups, cell groups, whatever we want to call them. And then my next question was, did he actually implement them, his proposal? You say he really didn't. Explain that.
Yes. Well, when he was translating the liturgy into German in about 1526 is when he published what's called the German Mass, he wrote in the preface, let's start these groups. This is the kind of thing they could do. But then he also wrote at the end, but we Germans, and I'm quoting, we're a wild, rude, tempestuous people with whom one must not likely make experiment in anything new.
Wow, well, I have a German background, so I appreciate that, Peter.
So Luther said, yes, let's do this. And at the end, he almost stopped himself saying, but we're a pretty wild people. I'm not sure this would work out too well right now.
That's so funny.
So some people have been critical of him for not actually implementing what he was suggesting. Mm-hmm. But also, I feel like we need to be a little bit kind to him, because don't forget, he was translating the scriptures into German for the first time. He was at times holed up in a castle. He was kind of on the run for his life. Right. The Catholic authorities were trying to get him and wanted to execute him. So he had a lot going on. And in those 20 years, he was developing a whole kind of new theology. Mm-hmm. So he didn't get round actually to start these small groups in his churches. But I feel like I want to give him some real grace in that, given everything else that was going on.
So Luther did not get around to starting small groups, I get that. Yeah. Were there any reformers during that time or later who actually did?
Yes, actually, Zwingli in Switzerland in 1520 in Zurich, he started small groups. He wanted people to come together to share and apply the teaching from sermons and so on. So for a number of years, he began to do that. But in 1525, the city authorities tried to put a stop on that whole thing. Mm. There are some people who actually said, no, we still need to meet. And then they baptized or rebaptized each other. Right. And that was some of the beginnings of the whole Anabaptist movement.
Right.
Or there was Martin Bucer in Strasbourg. Right. And he, in the 1540s, started what he called true Christian communities. And these were small group meetings in homes. He felt this was a return to the early church. He even said, I don't think there's any way we can keep the Ten Commandments unless we meet together and keep each other accountable in groups such as this.
Wow.
So there were reformers who went beyond Luther and actually started some of these groups, but many of them eventually found opposition or even persecution and the city authorities trying to ban them. It happened in Strasbourg well.
Well, I appreciate you doing this, sharing this so much because, of course, our heart has been small groups, you know, cell groups. You know, what, it was probably 45, 47 years ago, had a revelation of the underground church, which go back to the Bible, small groups, cell groups. Yeah. And so a lot of people say, well, it's in the Bible, we see that, but it really hasn't happened much until recently, and that just is not true.
Correct.
It's, God keeps returning us to that. I mean, I wrote a book, House to House, way back in the day, about 25, 30 years ago. It had to do with all this, you know, how to experience healthy small groups and house churches. And again, that's available on the show notes if you're interested. Let's take the next step. Who were some of the other groups to begin using small groups?
Sure. I mentioned the early reformers, but the Puritans in England started such groups. They called them conventicles, and they were about purifying church life. And so they would meet together for prayer, singing, conferring, even when some of the Puritans came over from England right. to, at that time, the colonies, New England. Cotton Mather was a leader there, and he began a whole network of conventicles. He had 12 people in each group. One of the Puritan leaders said, I quote him here, that he saw more success in discipling those who came to the conventicles than from all my public preaching to them.
Isn't that amazing?
That was Richard Baxter. So he was like, this is transforming people's lives.
Wow.
People like the Pietists in the Lutheran churches and in the Reformed churches throughout Europe were starting groups like this. A famous man was Spener. Mm-hmm. He led the way.
Right.
Then Anglican societies in England from about 1670, they started what they called societies for the purpose of personal holiness, but the Anglican societies quickly developed into kind of social outreach. They began like movements to transform society on ethical issues. So there was this kind of outworking from those. And then perhaps people have heard of the Moravians coming out of what is, you know, Germany today.
Mm-hmm.
And they had small groups. They called some of them bands, which is just a small group of people coming together to share, to confess their sins for one another. And saw a great, you know, transformation of people because of that. In fact, coming to John Wesley in 1738, he went to Herrnhut in Germany to visit the Moravians, and he wrote about, he found about 90 of these small groups meeting 2 to 3 times a week, Wesley wrote. So Wesley kind of also picked up some of his ideas from what he saw from the Moravians.
That's so interesting to me because, you know, of course, I'm a great fan of John Wesley. I've, you know, read his books and autobiography and on, learned so much from him. And he'd always talk about having bands and having societies, having classes. I thought he came up with that, Peter, but he learned that from somebody else.
Yes, and it wasn't just the Moravians. He learned from some of the Anglican societies and different people. So yes, he took things. He was influenced by other people, and we all are, really.
We are. We sure
all
are.
Learn from other people.
There's nothing new under the sun, you know, really.
And perhaps that's why looking at history can help us, because we can learn. Here,
let's talk about John Wesley. Yeah. You know, what about the Methodists? I'm assuming they formed these small groups, as you mentioned. Tell us more.
Sure. Well, Wesley became this master at networking and managing this movement.
Right.
And there were really 5 kinds of groups. There were societies, and they really became congregations in effect. But he had the class meetings.
Okay.
And these were groups of 12 people. They could be men and women, different ages.
They cut it off at 12?
Yes. Okay. Yes, very roughly. 12 people was the guide there. And they could have non-believers coming to those meetings, people of different backgrounds. And so this became like a cell group or a small group today where people would share, they'd discuss teaching and preaching. So that was the class meeting. But he then established bands, and these were the same gender, same marital status, similar age. And this is where people really got real in saying, this is where I've messed up this week, this is where I've sinned, this is where I've fallen. And Wesley had certain questions for the group to ask one another.
And these
another.
Were smaller groups, Peter?
Yes, often just 2, 3, 4 people.
So
Yes, same gender. So it was really this personal holiness. Where are we struggling? And again, Wesley wrote, I have found by experience that one of these people has learned more from 1 hour's close discourse than 10 years public preaching.
Wow.
So Wesley was sold on the idea of these bands for producing holiness. But also he developed something called select societies, and this was really a kind of a leadership training forum. He'd bring the class leaders together.
He was a genius.
He was very, very sharp with these things. And they would discuss together leadership issues, how we lead these classes, how we lead these groups. So the Select Societies was like a leadership training venue. Mm-hmm. And he also established penitent bands. These were for the people who were really making a mess of things and needed special help.
Really?
He called it people who have made a shipwreck of their faith.
Wow.
And really, if you look at the list of reasons why people would go into these penitent bands, it was for drunkenness, it was for wife beating, it was for stealing. So in a sense, they became a bit like our, you know, 12-step recovery
groups. Right, crisis groups
today.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yes, more kind of counseling intervention groups. So he had different groups. So the class meeting of 12, the bands, but leadership groups. And also he realized he needed to establish something different for those who had specific life besetting problems and issues.
Peter, you're helping me so much because, you know, as we've taught on small groups and people growing in Christ and discipleship all over the world, when I'm with a larger congregation, I'll tell the leaders, really consider finding a way to have small groups, having smaller groups, even if it's 12 or 20 or whatever, start there. But then I tell the small group leaders or even house church leaders, if you have 10 people or 12 people or 15 people in a house church or in a small group, have smaller groups.
Yes.
Somewhere where there's two or three in my name, in Jesus, as I'm in the midst of them, and where you can really get real and really pray for each other. And then, of course, what about people going through severe crisis? They need their own groups.
Yes.
And how do you train leaders?
Yes.
There needs to be a separate group for that. So, of course, as you know, I love John Wesley and all he's done, but this even makes me love what he's done even more as I hear you talk about this.
He was a great example, really, for many of these
amazing,
things.
Amazing, amazing. Yes. Did the small groups that we have encountered in these different historical movements only do well with certain types of people?
Now, I would say small groups could be used universally because we saw small groups in all kinds of different denominations, Lutherans, Anglicans, Methodists, different kinds of cultures, you know, in Sweden, in Germany, in North America, different denominations, different historical eras, 16th century, 17th century, 18th century, different social groups. Some were workers. Zinzendorf of the Moravians even had small groups meeting among the nobility in palaces and castles. So every kind of social economic group, they seem to work. They seem to work universally.
Right. I just want to say to all those listening from around the world, you know, if you want to know more, Peter's book, Cell Groups and House Churches, What History Teaches Us, that's a great book. And what we can learn today from the use of small groups in the centuries since the Reformation. And thank you for writing this. It's helped so many people already, and it's going to help so many more. And also more of a modern-day book on how to see healthy small groups, house to house, written by yours truly, back about 25 or 30 years ago, updated, of course, so it works today also. A couple more questions for you, Peter. What would you say is the theology that best supports the use of such groups for discipleship and outreach?
Yeah, that's a good question because we're not talking about just implementing a structure. There has to be a belief system that allows for that structure and allows it to flourish. So I think things like our faith, our Christian faith, it's a corporate faith. It's not just an individual faith. We need each other to go on with God and to learn. That also following God is often a process.
That's
we are saved through Jesus, but there are often things to work out. The belief in the priesthood of all believers.
Exactly.
We can all minister to one another. We can all be involved with evangelizing and teaching and praying for one another. Those things are important. Also, you know, confession to one another. And even the fact that there at times needs to be some structure and discipline, that we have to have some kind of rules and help people understand that. That can help contain the work that God is doing. So there is a theology that supports cell groups and small groups.
Right. So what are some of the lessons from your study of history which apply to us today?
Well, first of all, I would say something that I just mentioned, that cell groups are an issue of the heart values, not structure. I think that became true in many of these movements. We need to know what their core values are. That's important. I think we can see how they're useful for personal growth and holiness, but really how they can work in all kinds of churches and situations. It's interesting that most of these groups in history saw what they were doing as a return to the early church. Mm-hmm. So that seems to have been a profound kind of motivation that helps people move forward on this journey of having small groups.
Mm-hmm. You know, Peter, I find that often parachurch ministries do a great job with small groups.
Yes.
You were involved years ago in YWAM.
Yes.
Did a great job with small groups.
Yes.
Crew does a great
yes.
job. I mean, I can list ministry after ministry, college ministry.
Yes, Navigators.
Navigators, fantastic. Yeah. Yes. I learned a lot from Dawson Trotman, the founder yes. of the Navigators, and, yes. you know, things I've read that he has taught. And I think often, then we get to the church, it's harder because we're just, many pastors are focusing on having a good meeting, and we need good meetings. I'm not saying we don't, but if we can somehow bring in the reality and the truth from church history and the Bible,
yeah.
that small groups are so important for people yes. to be discipled. You know, I mean, as yeah. you know, with us in Dove International, we pastored for years and everyone was in a small group, and we called them cell groups for years. Learned that from Dr. Young-Hee Cho, you know, from Korea. And then we could become a movement because we trained so many leaders, but those leaders were trained, first of all, in small groups.
Yes.
And you mentioned something so important, and that was we don't focus on the structure. We focus on the life. We focus on people. We yep. focus on what God's doing in people's lives.
That's
I've
it.
Often said, my body has a structure, and it needs structure. Without that, I'd be about a foot tall on the floor,
yep.
but no one ever says to me, I love your structure, I love you, you know, I love your bone structure, but it'd be crazy. But we need the structure, but we need to make sure we're focusing on the life and focusing
yes.
on making disciples. Tell us more, Peter.
Yes, sure. Well, I think some of the lessons are also that the ones that seem to succeed in history and mm-hmm. last a long while, they're part of a bigger movement.
Oh, that's good.
It's not just an isolated group on their own, mm. but they're part of something bigger. And that's why the Moravians did well. That's
right.
why the Methodists
that's
did
right.
well, because they were part of this growing movement where they were reaching out beyond themselves.
Mm.
I mean, the Moravians traveled out to many nations and established
Correct.
Small groups. And Wesley the same. So the sense of outreach, part of a bigger movement. But then there was leadership who were providing the training and the structures as well. And so those are the ones that did the best, that lasted a long while and were more transformative of people's lives and the nations. So that's important. And then leadership of the groups themselves.
Right.
Everything requires some kind of facilitation and leadership. Mm-hmm. So that became an important issue. And a number of these stressed it's the actual example of the leader that matters. So with the Methodist, it was usually the leader who went first
okay.
in sharing about their life or saying, this is how I sinned this week
yeah.
or this is how I messed up. So leadership by example became a very important issue, I think, in the success of some of these small groups. And so the way the meeting is structured can be helpful. It should have an outward focus. A number of them were open to non-believers as
mm-hmm,
well. So
mm-hmm.
there was an evangelistic opportunity within that. And even practical things like don't let the group become too big.
Mm-hmm.
Spener in Germany in the 1700s, he had groups of like 50 people and it just became unworkable.
Right.
So even practical
sure.
things about how we structure a meeting, the size of the group,
yeah.
emphasize multiplication, these things became important as well.
A practical thing that we've often encouraged people to consider is if they have a small group of 20, 30, 40, 50 people. I mean, I've known of some small groups, quote unquote, as large as 70 or 80 people always sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Average church in America, I think, is about 75. We encourage them, have groups within the group. Have prayer groups within the group.
Yeah.
Have people at some time during the meeting go to different rooms or different parts of the room, get three people, four people, five people, have a small group
yes.
within the group. And we find often then people get a sense of grace from God that, yes, I can do this. I can lead a little prayer meeting or I can do this.
Right.
And then they can lead in other ways in the future. Anything else
yes.
you want to share with us today?
No, I think we've hit a number of good points there. I think looking at the scripture, but looking at church history is
yeah.
important.
So good.
And we can learn from so much. And I think groups are important. They need to be led well. They need to be led by example. There needs to be leadership training
mm-hmm.
and a sense of multiplication.
Yeah.
But they are the thing that God seems to use when there is renewal, revival in right. the church, wherever yeah. it is, whatever denomination,
right.
These small groups pop up again. Yeah. So I think we should take note of that.
Exactly. The longest revival in the world that I'm aware of, or awakening, was the East African revival, as far as I understand. And, you know, that was simply people meeting from house to house.
Yes.
And as God moved throughout all of East Africa, and you would know, you know, a lot about that. And so I have many people in different denominations. And, hey, you know, the movement we're part of now is, you know, 44 years old. And it's easy. I mean, it's really easy to forget some of those initial things that God showed us and taught us and use, you know, based on the Bible, church history, like cell groups, small groups. And it becomes secondary. Well, it's not that important, when really it's extremely important if we want to continue to see God move in our lives in a powerful way. Peter, this has been so refreshing. Any last-minute thoughts?
No, thank you for inviting me today. And we're praying that God would use groups like this to help
yes.
us all wherever we are.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise we'll look back and say, remember back 40, 50, 60 years ago when God was moving powerfully. The believers were the ministers, but there was a structure that helped that happen. And that was small groups and societies, and call them whatever you want, obviously.
Yes.
Cell Groups and House Churches, the book. What History Teaches Us. Pick that up. You get that on Amazon. Get that at the Devon International Bookstore. And the book, if that's by Peter Bunton, my friend, and then the book House to House, Learning How to Experience Healthy Small Groups and House Churches, written by Larry Kreider. Peter, thank you for being on the podcast again today. Every time that I interview you, you know, on different subjects, I'm always so inspired and always learn. So thank you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, everybody, thank you. You're making this all possible around the world as you're listening to Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Our heart cry is to talk to leaders from different walks of life, different nationalities, different cultures, and pick the brain, as we call it, to see what they've learned about leadership. And then how can we apply that to our lives? Because all it takes is one small area of shift and change. It can revolutionize your life. So we're so glad you've joined us today for the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. And looking forward to seeing you many, many more times in the future. And we'll be back next week. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryKreider.com.